Today I'm going to speak about the idea of the Bodhisattva and the vows of the Bodhisattva, which is what we've just chanted. And I was thinking, in some ways, this is the... If someone said, what is the difference between Zen, Buddhism, and mindfulness, then I think the essence of that difference is vow. There's an expression that's used by a Zen master. It talks about how Buddhism, Zen, is living by vow. And Kodosawaki said that the Bodhisattva dives into the flow of life through the power of vow, as opposed to being buffeted around in life by the power of their ego. And so it's effectively stepping out of the idea of freedom that we have as freedom being doing what we want or doing what we feel like, which is often the idea of freedom that is put around, possibly from in all cultures, I don't know, but certainly in Western culture, the idea that freedom means doing what you want, having what you want, getting what you want. And so living by vow is taking a very different idea of freedom, because living by vow is stepping towards a different kind of freedom, a kind of freedom where we are, rather than free to do what we want, we are free from our wants, is maybe the best way of saying it. And living by a vow, one of the core part aspects of being free from one's wants is seeing that we are far less significant than we think we are. And that we are not the centre of the universe. I think that's the key aspect of Buddha's insight, is that we are not the centre of the universe, even though we always live as if we think we are. So we're the centre of our subjective universe, but we can take some distance from that. And so the Bodhisattva, which literally means the one with the clear mind. Bodhisattva, bodhi is the mind. Sattva means clarity, the one with clarity of mind. And the Bodhisattva is an idea of an aspiration. When we take the vows of the Bodhisattva, we aspire to face in the direction of the Bodhisattva. And the key idea of Bodhisattva is that the benefits, basically, that literally the Bodhisattva is someone who is able to enter into nirvana, enter into a world beyond desire, and chooses to live in this world to help those who are still suffering. That is the key idea of the Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva is one who can achieve freedom and liberation, but chooses to live with difficulties of the life that we have. So from a traditional point of view, in Indian teachings, the aim is to escape rebirth, to no longer be born into this world where there is suffering. The aim of many Indian teachings, the aim of yoga, the aim of Vedanta, the aim of Buddhism, all are about stepping beyond, stepping outside the cycle of rebirth, from a traditional point of view. And the Bodhisattva is one who chooses to come back into the world of rebirth to help those around, to use the awareness that they have to help those around them. So that's the traditional view. In Zen, we talk less about reincarnation than maybe some other forms of Buddhism might do. It's a less important part of what we're interested in, because we're interested in right now, and we're interested in this moment, as opposed to what may or may not happen after death. And so we talk about that less than some of the schools. But the Bodhisattva is, from a traditional point of view, one who turns away from the option of leaving this life to a world beyond suffering and returns to help those around them. And so the Bodhisattva vow, the vow that Koda Sawaki says we can use to plunge into life as opposed to being buffeted by our ego, is the vow to be aware, be present, and be present for the benefit of all. For the benefit of all of humanity, for the benefit of all of existence. And of course, we're part of that. We're not a very significant part of that, but we are part of that. And so it's not saying that we deny ourselves. It's just saying that we don't take our desires too seriously. So that's the idea of the Bodhisattva, and this is why it's in some ways different from mindfulness. You could see, I was speaking with a Tibetan teacher who's a friend of mine, and he feels that mindfulness is kind of being ripped out of this, I'm not sure if I completely agree with him, but being ripped out of this tradition where it's being used as an act of service and being turned into something which is to benefit our ego, if you see, to make us feel better, to make us feel more comfortable. So I don't know enough about it to be able to comment on that. But the key thing is that for us, our practice of awareness is at heart an act of service. That's the thing. It's not an act of trying to feel better. We might feel better because of it. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with feeling better. It's just that that's not the heart of what Buddhist practice is about. Buddhist practice is about being aware, and through that awareness, being able to serve. So I want to look at the four vows which we have chanted. So we chanted Shuzho Muhen Segando, which is the numberless beings, I vow to save them all, which is what I've been talking about, the idea that we save all beings. Bono Mujin Segandan, the unending desires that we have, I vow to go beyond them all. Homon Muryo Segangaku, the gates of the Dharma, though they be numberless, I vow to pass through them all. And Butsudo Mujo Segando, which is the Buddha way, supreme, I vow to follow it. So that is the vows of the Bodhisattva, the essential vows of the Bodhisattva. And each of them has a certain spirit behind it. One thing that we can say is that the Bodhisattva ideal is someone who has, to an extent, gone beyond these vows in that they are aware, whereas these vows are about turning towards awareness. So they're turning us in the direction, they're saying that we are facing in the direction of the spirit of the Bodhisattva, as opposed to we have achieved something. So these are guidelines for where the directions we face. So it says, beings numberless, I vow to save them all. This is something that is effectively, through our practice, we appreciate that at a certain fundamental level, the ground of awareness, which is at our heart of experience, is no different from the ground of awareness at the heart of the experience of all others. At a certain fundamental level, we are not only all equal, but we are all the same. That at a certain fundamental level of existence, at the level of the ground of awareness, we are all manifestations of that same ground of awareness. And so this vow is a call to appreciate that at a certain fundamental level, the suffering of another being is no different from our own suffering. And therefore, we are called to heal the sufferings of all humanity, of all existence. And so our practice is partly about that healing. It's healing that suffering which exists within us, but it's also doing it for all of humanity and all of existence, all beings. And so that is at a certain kind of, in Buddhism, in Zen, and in all forms of Buddhism, we can talk about the relative perspective and the absolute perspective. From an absolute perspective, there is no self. From a relative perspective, we are all bumbling selves that go on through life as it is, and we must do our best. And so from an absolute perspective, we see the suffering of all beings as illusory and no different from the illusion that is our own suffering and the illusion that is our own selfness. And so we can, through that insight, through that taste of insight which comes through the practice of Zazen, it comes and goes, we can reach out with open heart to others in the relative world. And we can see that for all other people's problems, for their idiocies, which are no different from our own idiocies, they're all rooted in our misunderstandings, and therefore we can reach out with an open heart to others, no matter how difficult they may be. Of course, that practice itself is not easy, but nonetheless, we can be open to others to accept the suffering, and as the Dalai Lama says, see that every being is trying to be happy in a certain sense, even if their path towards happiness may be deeply misguided. The mistakes they make are the same mistakes that we make, maybe, you know, in different ways, but at a certain fundamental level, the mistakes that they make are no different from ours. And so we can be open-hearted towards them. And so that means I vow to save them all. It means we can, in our interactions with other people, we can be open-hearted and allow healing to take place through the ways in which we interact with others. Of course, we will often fail. That's the nature of life, is that we will often fail. We won't. But that aspiration is there, that the relationships we have with others are healing to humanity, healing to all of existence. And there are practical ways. So Dogen says, give to those that need. Dogen says that if you have the capacity, then the idea of dharanam, then you can give some of your wealth to help those who are less fortunate. And so it can be just very practical things like that. But there is a more fundamental, deep level that act of giving is neither an act of egotism, look how good I am because I give, nor is it an act of pity, to feel that I'm somehow better than the person I'm giving to, or the cause or whatever, the people who benefit from what I'm giving to, because I have something that they don't have. Because we see that at a certain fundamental level, whatever's got that person into the situation they're in is just simply a consequence of causes and conditions, and the fact that I'm not in that situation doesn't mean I'm in any way better. And so giving without any sense of superiority, sense of judgment, etc., is what can come from the manifestation of giving through the first vow. As I always say, we will make mistakes, and part of the practice of Zen is to notice the mistakes that we make. So if you are giving, if whether or not you choose to give to a homeless guy on the street who's coming up being slightly aggressive and they're begging, whether or not you choose, observe the feelings that come up, observe what's going on in that. So beings numberless, I vow to save them all. A commitment to be present for all, present for all humanity, all of existence, all of beings. Not only humanity, but all nature as well. So the second one is Bono Mujin Segandan. Desires, unending, I vow to overcome them all. But the word desires is not a good translation of the word Bono. It's often used, but the word desires is not a great translation. in some ways, it is about any emotional reactivity. So anger is with any emotional reactivity. So we are driven by our feelings. We are feeling beings. And our feelings are necessary for us to live in the world effectively and live in this world of suffering effectively. Our feelings are necessary to get us out of the way of a bus that might be hurtling down the street rather than just standing in front of it. You know, our self-preservation, all these things. So the word, it's often, Bono is translated as the word desires, but in fact it's far more than that. It's all these feelings which allow us to live in this relative world without starving to death, whatever, the fact that we get hungry. But what this is saying is that these drives, these impulses, there is no need to make them our master. And I think that in Western society, advertising, consumerism, etc., plays on these feelings more maybe so than was true back in Dogen's day. But nonetheless, we have all been puppet to these feelings. Whenever you're born, you can be puppet to these feelings. And so being able to take some distance from this rush of drives in us, which are trying to push us in certain directions, which make us puppets, effectively, we're puppets to our drives. So as far as Kodo Suwaki was saying, he was saying, don't be pushed around by your ego. So we are not puppets to doing what we feel like we want to do. That's effectively what's going on here. We can take some distance, and when there is some distance, when there is a more spacious awareness, then those things manifest in a different way. No longer, so the most obvious thing is that if you have a temper, the classic advice, take a few deep breaths before you act. That is classic Buddhism in a simple form. Taking a few deep breaths before the arising of anger manifests in the world in a way which just causes suffering. Yeah. Doesn't mean you don't manifest your anger, but it's done in this more skillful way. If we can take some distance from these feelings that are rattling around inside us, feelings in the most general sense. Similarly, there are kind of feelings of self-preservation, the feelings of which we don't always notice in us, but we are. It's said, so it's actually in a yoga text, it says that of all these, Bono, the one that is hardest for us to escape from is the fear of death. And that's something that Buddhism faces. You know, face the fact that we will one day no longer exist, something that we find difficult to believe is real. But this fear of death, which we don't really notice rattling around, we notice anger, we notice desire, those are the kind of things that we see on an everyday basis. We see those rattling around inside us. But this fear of death is something that we don't quite see, we don't see more so clearly, but nonetheless can make us do things which maybe are not necessarily the most skillful way of being in the world. Sometimes they make us do, so I think a lot of, there's a lot of psychologists, some psychologists believe that this fear of death is what drives us to do things like try to make us appear eternal, makes us impose our will on the world, try to make things succeed in the world, whether it's a work of art, whether it's a discovery in science, whether it's a new building, whatever, or something far less, it's almost the source of our drive to have an impact in the world. And lots of good can come from that, The sort of, even the drive to set up a Zen temple or something like that, that might come from the fear of death. We want to impose your vision on the world so that it lasts beyond you. And so a lot of good can come from these things. There's nothing wrong with it, or starting a charity. There's friends of mine who said, a gay couple, who said, well, we're never going to have children, so we won't leave that as a form of legacy. What we've decided to do as our legacy is they set up a charity which works on reforestation, and that is their legacy. So they'll be quite almost conscious of the fact that they want to manifest something in the world, and this is the way that they're going to manifest something in the world. So good comes from these things. It's not to say that these drives don't manifest positive things in the world, but nonetheless, if we are puppets of these things, then they will make us suffer and those around us suffer in obvious ways and more subtle ways. In fact, in my case of my friends, they are now retired, but there was a lot of suffering in them being able to let go of the organisation that they had created to allow others to take it forward. And that was a very difficult process both for them and around them. They did it in the end, skillfully, but nonetheless, that was very much almost... That was because it had come from this Bono, it made it harder for them to let go of. So, desires unending, I vow to overcome them all. And from a Zen perspective, to overcome means to be aware and conscious and constantly shining a light on them. I don't believe we're ever free of these things. I think from a Zen point of view, we are never free of... You are never fully enlightened. Or another way of saying it is you're always fully enlightened, but then it's gone. It's always there, but it's hidden. And to make enlightenment expressed in the world is to shine a light on those things which are hiding it. So the third one, Dharma gates countless, I vow to pass through them all. Homon Modyo. The Dharma gates here, the way that I like to interpret this is... So the word Dharma is used in different ways. It's used to mean teaching, but it's also used, and this might be the context here, the myriad aspects of existence. The myriad aspects of existence are called the Dharma, the Dharmas in Indian philosophy. And so that the Dharma gates countless, I vow to pass through them all, is that each moment of existence is a Dharma and is a gate that we pass through. And the question is, can we pass through each moment of existence skillfully and with awareness? That is what the third vow is calling us to do, to pass through each moment of existence with skillful awareness. And so Zazen is our practice to allow us to learn what is necessary to pass through each moment of existence with skillful awareness. And then the last, so in some ways these are following on from each other, the desires unending, I vow to overcome them all. The way to overcome them all is by being skillfully aware in each moment of existence. That is the way to overcome being a puppet of the Bono. And then finally, and in fact, I should have said from the beginning, the way to save all beings is to be no longer puppets of your desires. That's what Bhikkhu Suwaki said exactly. So the first vow is I vow to save all beings. The way to save all beings is to no longer be puppets of your desires, because by being a puppet of your desire, you are... ripples of suffering come out from you. Karma continues. And then the way to no longer be puppets of your desire is Dharma gates countless, I vow to pass through them, which means that each gate, each moment of existence, pass through with skillful awareness. And then finally, the Buddha way supreme, I vow to follow it. And from a Zen point of view, the Buddha way supreme means practice Zazen. That is it. But in the wider context of the teachings, that's the thing. But most important is to practice Zazen. And by practicing Zazen, the Buddha way, as far as Dogen was concerned, the Buddha way was exactly the posture and practice of Zazen on a regular basis. And so the Buddha way supreme, I vow to follow it, is by practicing Zazen regularly, then Dharma gates countless, I pass through them with skillful means. And so I overcome desires. And as a result, I reduce the suffering in the world. So one thing to say about this, which I've already alluded to, is it's interesting that it's actually phrased in such a way that when you read it, you know it's impossible. You know that you can't save every being. You know that you cannot overcome every passion. You know that every moment of existence, you can't be present with awareness. You know that maybe the last one, there is a possibility that you might practice regularly. But the others are impossibilities to an extent. And so you are vowing the impossible. And that is okay. So part of the practice is to vow the impossible, to see that no matter how great we are never sorted fully, though we are always already sorted at a certain fundamental level. And so you vow the impossible. From a relative point of view, one can never fulfill these vows completely. From an absolute point of view, by letting go of the self, these vows are always already fulfilled. So from a relative point of view, it's to remind us, and this is Okamura, I was reading Okamura writing about the vows, and he says, we can see that even the best of us, from a relative point of view, is not much better than the worst of us. And so, if you are the best, don't feel so great. If you are the worst, don't feel so bad. That's what he says, is by seeing the impossibility of these vows, it's almost, with tongue-in-cheek, you vow to be some supreme hero, which is unattainable. And then you realise that's not so great, so you let go of the you. It's not so possible, so you let go of you. So that's what I want to say about these for today. Most important, so really they are a call to awareness, a call to be present to others, and saying that the way to awareness and to be present for others is through practice, through regular practice. Okamura said something interesting as well, which I'd never heard before, but I found quite interesting. He was saying that these are the universal vows of the Bodhisattva, which any of us who chooses to commit to the Buddha path, the Buddha way, takes. He also said that the vows of the Bodhisattva also, so they're the universal, that any of us access these and vow the impossible. He also said that we also make personal vows, and which is how, whether we're conscious about it or unconscious about it, we make personal vows about how these things manifest in our lives. What does it mean on a practical day-to-day basis? What does it mean? And it's clear that for him, he's thought about it and thought, okay, this is the way this manifests in my life. And I've never really been quite conscious about that, and it's made me think that for me too, okay, what does it mean for me? How will it manifest in my life? And being conscious about on a more relative, practical, day-to-day level, what does this mean? The vows give you the big template, but what does it mean on a personal level? What commitments does one make on a personal level which decrease suffering in the world, help both yourself and others to be more aware, and continue practice from the time of Buddha to 2,500 years ago, what are we doing now, which takes what was happening then, makes it alive today in such a way that it will still be here in another 2,500 years. Yeah. Those are the things that are made personal through these vows. So that's all I want to say. But what we'll do, we're just going to finish once more by chanting the four vows.
Shiguro Segan Mo-o.